much afraid, they ran to hide themselves somewhere in the town. Chapter 33. The phone rang. Mr. Holloway picked it up.
"Dad, this is Willie. We can't go to the police station. We may not be home today. Tell Mom, tell Jim's Mom."
"Willie, where are you?"
"We got to hide. They're looking for us."
"Who, for God's sake?"
"I don't want you in it, Dad. You got to believe. We'll just hide one day, two, until they go away. If we came home, they'd follow and hurt you or Ma or Jim's Mom. I gotta go."
"Willie, don't."
"Oh, Dad," said Will. "Wish me luck." Click.
Mr. Holloway looked out at the trees, the houses, the streets, hearing a faraway music. "Willie," he said to the dead phone, "luck." And he put on his coat and hat and went out into the strange, bright, rainy sunshine that filled the cold air. Chapter 34. In front of the United Cigar Store, on this before-noon Sunday, with the bells of all churches ringing across here, colliding with each other there, showering sound from the sky now that the rain was spent, in front of the cigar store, the Cherokee wooden Indian stood, his carved plumes pearled with water, oblivious to Catholic or Baptist bells, oblivious to the steadily approaching sun-bright cymbals, the thumping pagan heart of the carnival band, the flourished drums, the old womanish shriek of Calliope, the shadow drift of creatures far stranger than he, did not witch the Indian's yellow hawk-fierce gaze. Still, the drums did tilt churches and plummet forth mobs of boys, curious and eager for any change, mild or wild. So, as the church bells stopped up their silver and iron rain, pew-stiffened crowds became relaxed parade crowds, as the carnival, a promotion of brass, a flush of velvet, all lion-pacing, mammoth-shuffling, flag-fluttered by. The shadow of the Indian's wooden tomahawk lay on an iron grill embedded in the sidewalk in front of the cigar store. Over this grill, with faint metallic reverberations, year after year people passed, dropping tonnages of mint gum wrapper, gold cigar band, match stub, cigarette butt, or copper penny, which vanished below forever. Now, with the parade, hundreds of feet rang and clustered on the grill as the carnival strode by on stilts, roared by in tiger and volcano sounds and colors. Under the grill, two shapes trembled. Above, like a great Baroque peacock striding the bricks and asphalt, the freak's eyes opened out to stare, to search office roofs, church spires, read dentists' and opticians' signs, check dime and dry goods stores as drums shocked plate glass windows and wax dummies quaked in facsimiles of fear. A multitude of hot and incredibly bright, fierce eyes. The parade moved, desiring but not quenching its desire. For the things it most wanted were hidden in dark. Jim and Will, under the cigar store sidewalk grill. Crouch pressed, knee to knee, heads up, eyes alert, they sucked their breaths like iron popsicles. Above, women's dresses flowered in a cold breeze. Above, men tilted on the sky. The band, in a collision of cymbals, knocked children against their mothers' knees with concussion.
"There," exclaimed Jim, "the parade. It's right out front the cigar store. What are we doing here, Will? Let's go."
"No," cried Will hoarsely, clenching Jim's knee.
"It's the most obvious place, in front of everybody. They'll never think to check here. Shut up."
Thrum!
The grill above rang with the touch of a man's shoe, and the worn nails in that shoe.
Dad!
Will almost cried. He rose, sank back, biting his lips. Jim saw the man above wheel this way, wheel that, searching, so near yet so far, 3 feet away. I could just reach up, thought Will. But Dad, pale, nervous, hurried on. And Will felt his soul fall over, cold and white jelly quivering inside. Bang! The boys jerked. A chewed lump of pink bubblegum, falling, had hit a pile of old paper near Jim's foot. A 5-year-old boy above, crouched on the grill, peered down with dismay after his vanished sweet.
Get,
thought Will. The boy knelt, hands to the grill.
Go on,
thought Will. He had a crazy wish to grab the gum and stuff it back up into the little boy's mouth. A parade drum thumped one huge time. Then, silence. Jim and Will glanced at each other. The parade, both thought, it's halted. The small boy stuck one hand half through the grill. Above, in the street, Mr. Dark, the illustrated man, glanced back over his river of freaks, cages, at the sunburst tubas and python brass horns. He nodded. The parade fell apart. The freaks hurried half to one sidewalk, half to the other, mingling with the crowd, passing out handbills, eyes, fire crystal, quick, striking like snakes. The small boy's shadow cooled Will's cheek. The parade's over, he thought. Now the search begins.
Look, Ma!
The small boy pointed down through the grill.
There!
Chapter 35. In Ned's Night Spot, half a block from the cigar store, Charles Holloway, exhausted from no sleep, too much thinking, far too much walking, finished his second coffee and was about to pay when the sharp silence from the street outside made him uneasy. He sensed rather than saw the mild intermingled disturbance as the parade melted among the sidewalk crowds. Not knowing why, Charles Holloway put his money away.
Warm it up again, Ned.
Ned was pouring coffee when the door swung wide. Someone entered and splayed his right hand lightly on the counter. Charles Holloway stared. The hand stared back at him. There was a single eye tattooed on the back of each finger.
Mom, down there, look!
The boy cried, pointing through the grill. More shadows passed and lingered, including the skeleton, tall as a dead tree in winter, all skull, all scarecrow, stilted bones, the thin man, the skeleton, Mr. Skull, played his xylophone shadow upon hidden things, cold paper rubbish, warm, flinching boys below.
Go, thought Will. Go!
The plump fingers of the child gesticulated through the grill.
Go!
Mr. Skull walked away.
Thank God, thought Will, then gasped, oh no!
For the dwarf as suddenly appeared, waddling along, a fringe of bells on his dirty shirt jingling softly, his toed shadow tucked under him, his eyes like broken splinters of brown marble, now bright on the surface, mad, now deeply, mournfully, forever lost and gone, buried away, mad, looking for something could not be found, a lost self somewhere, lost boys for an instant, then the lost self again. Two parts of the little squashed man fought to jerk his flashing eyes here, there, around, up, down, one seeking the past, one the immediate present.
Mama!
Said the child. The dwarf stopped and looked at the boy no bigger than himself. Their eyes met. Will flung himself back, tried to gum his body into the concrete. He felt Jim do the same, not moving, but moving his mind, his soul, thrusting it into darkness to hide from the little drama above.
"Come on, Junior," a woman's voice.
The boy was pulled up and away. Too late, for the dwarf was looking down. And in his eyes were the lost bits and fitful pieces of a man named Fury, who had sold lightning rods how many days, how many years ago, in the long, the easy, the safe and wondrous time before this fright was born.
"Oh, Mr. Fury," thought Will, "what they've done to you. Threw you under a pile driver, squashed you in a steel press, squeezed the tears and screams out of you, trapped you in a jack-in-the-box all pressed down until there's nothing left of you, Mr. Fury. Nothing left but this
dwarf." And the dwarf's face was less human, more machine now. In fact, a camera. The shuddering eyes flexed, sightless, opening upon darkness. Tick. Two lenses expanded, contracted with liquid swiftness. A picture snap of the grill. A snap also of what lay beneath.
Is he staring at the metal, thought Will, or the spaces between the metal?
For a long moment, the ruined, squashed, clay doll dwarf squatted while standing tall. His flash camera eyes were bulbed wide, perhaps still taking pictures. Will, Jim, were not seen really at all. Only their shape, their color and size were borrowed by these dwarf camera eyes. They were clapped away in the box brownie skull. Later, how much later, the picture would be developed by the wild, the tiny, the forgetful, the wandering and lost lightning rod mind. What lay under the grill would then be really seen. And after that, revelation, revenge, destruction. Click, snap, tick. Children ran laughing by. The dwarf child, drawn by their running joy, was swept along with them. Madly he skipped off, remembered himself, and went looking for something he knew not what. The cloudy sun poured light through all the sky. The two boys, boxed in light-slotted pit, hissed their breath softly out through gritted teeth. Jim squeezed Will's hand tight, tight. Both waited for more eyes to stride along and rake the steel grill. The blue, red, green, tattooed eyes, all five of them, fell away from the countertop. Charles Halloway, sipping his third coffee, turned slightly on the revolving stool. The illustrated man was watching him. Charles Halloway nodded. The illustrated man did not nod or blink, but stared until the janitor wanted to turn away, but did not, and simply gazed as calmly as possible at the impertinent intruder.
"What'll it be?" asked the cafe proprietor.
"Nothing." Mr. Dark watched Will's father.
"I'm looking for two boys."
"Who isn't?" Charles Halloway rose, paid, walked off.
"Thanks, Ned."
In passing, he saw the man with the tattoos hold his hands out, palms up, toward Ned.
"Boys," said Ned, "how old?"
The door slammed. Mr. Dark watched Charles Halloway walk off outside the window. Ned talked, but the illustrated man did not hear. Outside, Will's father moved toward the library, stopped, moved toward the courthouse, stopped, waited for some better sense to direct him, felt his pocket, missed his smokes, and turned toward the United Cigar Store. Jim looked up, saw familiar feet, pale face, salt and pepper hair.
"Will, your dad, call to him. He'll help us."
Will could not speak.
"I'll call to him."
Will hit Jim's arm, shook his head violently. "No."
"Why not?"
mouthed Jim.
Because, said Will's lips.
Because? He gazed up. Dad looked even smaller up there than he had last night seen from the side of the house. It would be like calling to one more boy passing. They didn't need one more boy, they needed a general. No, a major general. He tried to see Dad's face at the cigar counter window and discover whether it looked really older, firmer, stronger than it did last night, washed with all the milk colors of the moon. But all he saw was Dad's fingers twitching nervously, his mouth working as if he didn't dare ask his needs from Mr. Tetley.
One 25-cent cigar. My God, said Mr. Tetley above, the man's rich.
Charles Holloway took his time removing the cellophane, waiting for some hint, some move on the part of the universe to show him where he was going, why he had come back this way for a cigar he did not really want. He thought he heard himself called twice, glanced swiftly at the crowds, saw clowns passing with handbills, then lit the cigar he did not want from the eternal blue gas flame that burned in a small silver jet pipe on the counter, and, puffing smoke, dropped the cigar band with his free hand. Saw the band bounce on the metal grill and vanish, his eyes following it farther down to where it lit at the feet of Will Holloway, his son. Charles Holloway choked on cigar smoke. Two shadows there, yes. And the eyes, terror gazing up out of the dark well under the street. He almost bent to seize the grate, yelling. Instead, incredulous, he only blurted softly, with the crowd around and the weather clearing, Jim? Will? What the hell's going on? At which moment, 100 feet away, the illustrated man came out of Ned's night spot.
Mr. Holloway, said Jim.
Come up out of there, said Charles Holloway.
The illustrated man, a crowd among crowds, pivoted slowly, then walked toward the cigar store.
Dad, we can't. Don't look at us down here.
The illustrated man was some 80 feet away.
Boys, said Charles Holloway.
The police.
Mr. Holloway, said Jim hoarsely. We're dead if you don't look up. The illustrated man, if he...
The what? Asked Mr. Holloway.
The man with the tattoos.
From the cafe counter, 5 electric blue-inked eyes fixed Mr. Holloway's memory.
Dad, look over at the courthouse clock while we tell you what happened.
Mr. Holloway straightened up. And the illustrated man arrived. He stood studying Charles Holloway.
Sir, said the illustrated man.
11:15, Charles Holloway judged the courthouse clock, adjusted his wristwatch, cigar in mouth. 1 minute slow.
Sir, said the illustrated man.
Will held Jim. Jim held Will fast in the gum wrapper, tobacco-littered pit as the 4 shoes rocked, shuffled, tilted above.
Sir, said the man named Dark, probing Charles Holloway's face for the bones there to compare to other bones in other half-similar people. The Cougar-Dark combined shows have picked 2 local boys, too, to be our special guests during our celebratory visit. Well, I... Will's father tried not to glance at the sidewalk. These 2 boys... Will watched the tooth-sharp shoe nails of the illustrated man flash, sparking the grill. These boys will ride all the rides, see each show, shake hands with every performer, go home with magic kits, baseball bats.
Who, interrupted Mr. Holloway, are these lucky boys?
2 selected from photos snapped on our midway yesterday. Identify them, sir, and you will share their fortune. There are the boys.
He sees us down here, thought Will. Oh, God!
The illustrated man thrust out his hands. Will's father lurched. Tattooed in bright blue ink, Will's face gazed up at him from the palm of the right hand. Ink sewn to the left palm, Jim's face was indelible and natural as life.
You know them? The illustrated man saw Mr. Halloway's throat clench, his eyelids squinch, his bones struck vibrant as from a sledgehammer blow. Their names?
Dad, careful, Will thought.
I don't, said Will's father. You know them.
The illustrated man's hands shook, held out to view, asking for the gift of names, making Jim's face on the flesh, Will's face on the flesh, Jim's face hidden beneath the street, Will's face hidden beneath the street, tremble, writhe, pinch.
Sir, you wouldn't want them to lose out.
No, but...
Mr. Dark loomed closer, magnificent in his picture gallery flesh, his eyes, the eyes of all his beasts and hapless creatures cutting through his shirt, coat, trousers, fastening the old man tight, biting him with fire, fixing him with thousandfold attentions. Mr. Dark shoved his two palms near.
But?
Mr. Halloway, needing something to excruciate, bit his cigar.
I thought for a moment.
Thought what? Grand delight from Mr. Dark.
One of them looked like...
Like who? Too eager, thought Will. You see that, Dad, don't you?
Mister, said Will's father, why are you so jumpy about two boys?
Jumpy? Mr. Dark's smile melted like cotton candy.
Jim scooched himself down into a dwarf. Will crammed himself down into a midget, both looking up, waiting.
Sir, said Mr. Dark, is my enthusiasm that to you? Jumpy?
Will's father noted the muscles cord along the arms, roping and unroping themselves with a writhe like the puff adders and sidewinders, doubtless inked and venomous there.
One of those pictures, drawled Mr. Halloway, looks like Milton Blomquist.
Mr. Dark clenched a fist.
A blinding ache struck Jim's head.
The other, Will's father was almost bland, looks like Avery Johnson.
Oh, Dad, thought Will, you're great.
The illustrated man clenched his other fist. Will, his head in a vise, almost screamed.
Both boys, finished Mr. Halloway, moved to Milwaukee some weeks ago.
You, said Mr. Dark coldly. Lie.
Will's father was truly shocked.
Me? And spoil the prize winner's fun?
Fact is, said Mr. Dark, we found the names of the boys 10 minutes ago. Just want to double check.
So, said Will's father, disbelieving.
Jim, said Mr. Dark.
Will.
Jim writhed in the dark. Will sank his head deep in his shoulder blades, eyes tight.
Will's father's face was a pond into which the two dark stone names sank without a ripple.
First names? Jim? Will? Lots of Jims and Wills, couple hundred, town like this.
Will, crouched and squirming, thought, who told?
Miss Foley? But she was gone, her house empty and full of rain shadows.
Only one other person.
The little girl who looked like Miss Foley weeping under the tree?
The little girl who frightened us so bad?
He wondered.
In the last half hour, the parade, going by, found her, and her crying for hours, afraid and ready to do anything, say anything, if only with music, horses plunging, world racing, they would grow her old again, grow her around again, lift her,
shut up her crying, stop up the awful thing, and make her as she was? Did the carnival promise? Lie to her when they found her under the tree and ran her off? The little girl crying, but not telling all, because...
Jim Will, said Will's father. First names. What about the last?
Mr. Dark did not know the last names.
His universe of monsters sweated phosphorus on his hide, soured his armpits, reeked, slammed between his iron-sinewed legs.
Now, said Will's father with a strange and to him almost delightful because new calm,
I think you're lying. You don't know the last names. Now, why should you, a carnival stranger, lie to me here on a street in some town on the backside of nowhere?
The illustrated man clenched his two calligraphic fists very hard.
Will's father, his face pale, considered these mean, constricted fingers, knuckles, digging nails.
Inside which two boys' faces, crushed hard in dark vise, tight, very tight in prison flesh, were kept in fury. Two shadows below thrashed in agony.
The illustrated man erased his face to serenity, but a bright drop fell from his right fist. A bright drop fell from his left fist. The drops vanished through the steel sidewalk grill. Will gasped. Wetness had struck his face. He clapped his hand to it, then looked at his palm. The wetness that had hit his cheek was bright red. He glanced from it to Jim, who lay still now also, for the scarification, real or imagined, seemed over, and both flicked their eyes up to where the illustrated man's shoes flint-sparked the grill, grinding steel on steel.
Will's father saw the blood ooze from the clenched fists, but forced himself to look only at the illustrated man's face as he said,
"Sorry I can't be more help."
Beyond the illustrated man, rounding the corner, hands weaving the air, dressed in harlequin gypsy colors, face waxen, eyes hid behind plum-dark glasses, the fortune-teller, the dust witch, came mumbling. A moment later, looking up, Will saw her.
Not dead, he thought. Carried off, bruised, fallen, yes, but now back and mad. Lord, yes, mad, looking especially for me.
Will's father saw her. His blood slowed, by instinct alone, to a pudding in his chest. The crowd opened happily, laughing and commenting on her bright, if tattered, costume, trying to remember what she rhymed so as to tell it later. She moved, fingers feeling the town as if it were an immensely complicated and lush tapestry. And she sang.
Tell you your husbands, tell you your wives, tell you your fortunes, tell you your lives. See me, I know, see me at the show. Tell you the color of his eyes, tell you the color of her lies, tell you the color of his goal, tell you the color of her soul. Come now, don't go, see me. See me at the show.
Children appalled, children impressed, parents delighted, parents in high good humor, and still the gypsy from the dusts of living sang. Time walked in her murmuring. She made and broke microscopic webs between her fingers wherewith to feel soot fly up, breath fly out. She touched the wings of flies, the souls of invisible bacteria, all specks, mites, and mica snowings of sunlight, filtrated with motion and much more hidden emotion. Will and Jim cracked their bones,
cowered down, hearing.
Blind, yes, blind. But I see what I see where I be, said the witch softly. There's a man with a straw hat in autumn. Hello. And, why, there's Mr. Dark, and an old man. An old man.
He's not that old, cried Will to himself, blinking up at the three,
as the witch stopped, her shadow falling moist frog cool on the hidden boys.
Old man.
Mr. Holloway was jolted as by a series of cold knives thrust in his stomach.
Old man, old man, said the witch.
She stopped this.
Ah!
The hairs in her nostrils bristled. She gaped her mouth to savor air.
Ah!
The illustrated man quickened.
Wait!
Sighed the gypsy. Her fingernails scraped down an unseen blackboard of air. Will felt himself yip, bark, whimper like an aggravated hound. Slowly her fingers climbed down, feeling the spectrums, weighing the light. In another moment, a forefinger might thrust to the sidewalk grill, implying, there, there.
Dad, thought Will, do something.
The illustrated man, gone sweetly patient now that his blind but immensely aware dust lady was here, watched her with love.
Now?
The witch's fingers itched. Now, said Will's father, loud. The witch flinched.
Now, this is a fine cigar, yelled Will's father, turning with great pomp back to the counter.
Quiet, said the illustrated man. The boys looked up.
Now,
the witch sniffed the wind.
Got to light it again.
Mr. Holloway stuck the cigar in the eternal blue flame.
Silence, suggested Mr. Dark.
Ever smoke yourself? Asked Dad.
The witch, from the concussion of his fiercely erupted and overly jovial words, dropped one wounded hand to her side, wiped sweat from it, as one wipes an antenna for better reception, and drifted it up again, her nostrils flared with wind.
Ah!
Will's father blew a dense cloud of cigar smoke. It made a fine, thick cumulus surrounding the woman.
Gah!
She choked. Fool! The illustrated man barked. But whether at man or woman, the boys below could not tell.
Here, let's buy you one!
Mr. Holloway blew more smoke, handing Mr. Dark a cigar. The witch exploded a sneeze, recoiled, staggered away. The illustrated man snatched Dad's arm, saw that he had gone too far, let go, and could only follow his gypsy woman off in some clumsy and totally unexpected defeat. But then, in going, he heard Will's father say,
A fine day to you, sir.
No, Dad, thought Will.
The illustrated man came back. Your name, sir? He asked directly.
Don't tell him, thought Will.
Will's father debated a moment, took the cigar from his mouth, tapped ash, and said quietly, Holloway.
Work in the library.
Drop by sometime.
You can be sure, Mr. Holloway, I will.
The witch was waiting near the corner. Mr. Holloway wetted his forefinger, tested the wind, and sent a cumulus her way. She flailed back, gone. The illustrated man went rigid, spun about, and strode off, the ink portraits of Jim and Will crushed, hard iron tight in his fists. Silence. It was so quiet under the grill, Mr. Holloway thought the two boys had died of fright. And Will, below, gazing up, eyes wet, mouth wide, thought,
Oh my gosh, why didn't I see it before? Dad's tall. Dad's very tall indeed.
Still, Charles Holloway did not look down at the grill, but only at the small comets of splashed red color left on the sidewalk, trailed around the corner, dropped from the clenched hands of the vanished Mr. Dark. He was also gazing with surprise at himself, accepting the surprise, the new purpose, which was half despair, half serenity, now that the incredible deed was done. Let no one ask why he had given his true name. Even he could not assay and give its real weight. Now he could only read the numerals on the courthouse clock and speak to it while the boys below listened. Oh, Jim, Will, something is going on. Can you hide, keep out from under the rest of the day? We got to have time. With things like this, where do you begin? No law's been broken, none on the books anyway. But I feel dead and buried a month. My flesh ripples. Hide, Jim. Will hide. I'll tell your mothers you've got jobs at the carnival. Good excuse for you not coming home. Stay hid until dark, then come to the library at 7. Meantime, I'll check police records on carnivals. Newspaper files at the library, books, old folios, everything that might fit. God willing, by the time you show up after dark, I'll have a plan. Walk easy until then. Bless you, Jim. Bless you, Will. The small father, who was very tall now, walked slowly away. His cigar, unnoticed, fell from his hand, dropped in a spark shower through the grate. It lay in the square pit, glowing its single fiery pink eye at Jim and Will, who looked back, and at last snatched to blind and put it out. Chapter 36. The dwarf, baring his demented and wildly lighted eyes, made his way south on Main Street. Stopping suddenly, he developed a film strip in his head, scanned it, bleated, and blundered back through the forest of legs to reach for and pull the illustrated man down where a whisper was as good as a shout. Mr. Dark listened, then fled, leaving the dwarf far behind. Reaching the cigar store Indian, the illustrated man sank to his knees. Clutching the steel lattice grill, he peered down in the pit. Below lay yellow newspapers, wilted candy wrappers, burnt cigars, and gum. Mr. Dark's cry was muffled fury. Lose something? Mr. Tetley blinked over his counter. The illustrated man clenched the grate, nodding once. I clean under the grate once a month for the money, said Mr. Tetley. How much you lose? Dime? Quarter? Half dollar? Bing! The illustrated man glared up. In the cash register window, a small fire-red sign jumped high. No sale. Chapter 37. The town clock struck 7. The echoes of the great chime wandered in the unlit halls of the library. An autumn leaf, very crisp, fell somewhere in the dark, but it was only the page of a book turning. Off in one of the catacombs, bent to a table under a grass-green-shaded lamp, lips pursed, eyes narrowed, sat Charles Holloway, his hands trembling the pages, lifting, rearranging the books. Now and then he hurried off to peer into the autumn night, watchful of the streets. Then again he came back to paperclip pages, to insert papers, to scribble out quotations, whispering to himself. His voice brought forth quick echoes from the library vaults. Look here. Here, said the night passages. This picture. Picture, said the halls. And this, the dust settled. It had been the longest day of all the days he could remember in his life. He had mingled with strange and not-so-strange crowds. He had searched after the searchers in the wake of the wide scattering parade. He had resisted telling Jim's mother, Will's mother, more than they needed to know for a happy Sunday, and meantime crossed shadows with Dwarf, traded nods with Pinhead and Fire Eater, kept free of shadowed alleys, and controlled his panic when, doubling back, he saw the basement pit empty under the cigar store grill, and knew that the boys were at hide-and-seek somewhere nearby or somewhere, praise God, very far away. Then, in the crowds, he moved to the carnival ground, stayed out of tents, stayed free of rides, observed, watched the sun go down, and just at twilight, surveyed the cold glass waters of the mirror maze and saw just enough on the shore to pull him back before he drowned. Wet all over, cold to the bone, before night caught him, he let the crowd protect, warm, and bear him away up into town to the library, and to most important books, which he arranged in a great literary clock on a table, like someone learning to tell a new time. So he paced round and round the huge clock, squinting at the yellowed pages as if they were moth wings pinned dead to the wood. Here lay a portrait of the Prince of Darkness. Next, a series of fantastic sketches of the Temptations of St. Anthony. Next, some etchings from the Bizzarrie by Giovan Battista Bracelli, depicting a set of curious toys, human-like robots engaged in various alchemical rites. At 11:55 stood a copy of Dr. Faustus. At 2 lay an occult iconography. At 6, under Mr. Halloway's trailed fingers now, a history of circuses, carnivals, shadow shows, puppet menageries inhabited by mountebanks, minstrels, stilt-walking sorcerers, and their fantoccini. More, a manual of the air kingdoms, things that fly down history. At 9 sharp, by demons possessed, lying atop Egyptian filters, lying atop the torments of the damned, which in turn crushed flat the spell of mirrors. Very late up the literary clock, one named Locomotives and Trains, the mystery of sleep, between midnight and dawn, the witch's Sabbath, and pacts with demons. It was all laid out. He could see the face, but there were no hands on this clock. He could not tell what hour of the night of life it was for himself, the boys, or the unknowing town. For in sum, what had he to go by? A 3 o'clock in the morning arrival, a grotesque looking-glass maze, a Sunday parade. A tall man with a swarm of electric blue pictures itching on his sweaty hide, a few drops of blood falling down through a pavement grill. 2 frightened boys staring up out of the earth. And himself, alone in mausoleum quiet, nudging the puzzle together. What was there about the boys that made him believe the simplest word they whispered up through the grill? Fear itself was proof here, and he had seen enough fear in his life to know it, like the smell from a butcher's shop in summer twilight. What was there about the illustrated carnival owner's silences that spoke thousands of violent, corrupt, and crippling words? What was there in that old man he had seen through a tent flap late this afternoon, seated in a chair with the words Mr. Electrico bannered over him? Power webbing and crawling on his flesh like green lizards. All of it. And now these books. This. He touched physiognomy, the secrets of the individual's character as found in his face. Were Jim and Will, then, featured all angelic, pure, half-innocent, peering up through the sidewalk at marching terror? Did the boys represent the ideal for your woman, man, or child of excellent bearing, color, balance, and summer disposition? Conversely, Charles Holloway turned a page. Did the scurrying freaks, the illustrated marvel, bear the foreheads of the irascible, the cruel, the covetous, the mouths of the lewd and untruthful, the teeth of the crafty, the unstable, the audacious, the vainglorious, and your murderous beast? No. The book slipped shut. If faces were judged, the freaks were no worse than many he'd seen slipping from the library late nights in his long career. There was only one thing sure. Two lines of Shakespeare said it. He should write them in the middle of the clock of books to fix the heart of his apprehension. By the pricking of my thumbs, something wicked this way comes. So vague, yet so immense. He did not want to live with it, yet he knew that during this night, unless he lived with it very well, he might have to live with it all the rest of his life. At the window, he looked out and thought, Jim, Will, are you coming? Will you get here? Waiting, his flesh took paleness from his bones. Chapter 38. The library, then, at 7:15, 7:30, 7:45 of a Sunday night, cloistered with great drifts of silence and transfixed avalanche of books poised like the cuneiform stones of eternity on shelves, so high the unseen snows of time fell all year there. Outside, the town breathed back and forth to the carnival, hundreds of people passing near where Jim and Will lay strewn in bushes to one side of the library, now ducking up, now ducking down, to nose raw earth. Cheese it! Both smothered in grass. Across the street there passed what could have been a boy, could have been a dwarf, could have been a boy with dwarf mind, could have been anything, blown along like the scuttle crab leaves on the frost mica sidewalks. But then whatever it was went away. Jim sat up. Will still lay face buried in good, safe dirt. Come on, what's wrong? The library, said Will. I'm even afraid of it now. All the books, he thought, perched there, hundreds of years old, peeling skin, leaning on each other like 10 million vultures. Walk along the dark stacks and all the gold titles shine their eyes at you. Between Old Carnival,